Chapter 21. He was 20 and she was 17. In August, Nanny began nursing school. She had no money. All she had to bring to school were the nurse's shoes Herman bought. Nanny loved her Proby uniform, largely unchanged since Rose's day, except for the skirt length. It was mid-calf length, blue with white pinstripes. She wore it with white hose and white nurse's shoes. There were two sets of starched white collars and cuffs that buttoned to her neck and sleeves, two pairs of white sleeves to cover the sleeves on her uniform when she was working with patients, and two white aprons that buttoned to the uniform at chest height and tied in the back. The uniform had mother-of-pearl buttons down the front and on the starched white cuffs. It was cotton, requiring Natty to wash and iron it daily. The collar, cuffs, and aprons were sent to the school laundry for starching. Natty was also issued a beautiful waist-length nurse's cape, navy blue on the outside and bright red on the inside, with Natty's name, N. Leibowitz, embroidered inside the collar. It made her feel like a real nurse. Natty didn't have money for clothes. She brought a few skirts and sweater sets, some good leather shoes and purses to match, and the winter coat Eddie had bought her. Her clothes were quickly going out of style. It upset her to think the other girls might tease her. Instead, the girls were wonderful and kind and funny. Everyone shared clothes anyway. They seemed to love Natty's sense of humor and fun. They visited each other's rooms when they were off duty and not in class. Natty danced around in a bra, panties, and a lampshade on her head. She couldn't remember having so much fun. When she had a date with Eddie, all the girls scrounged inside their wardrobes to gather the most stylish clothes to fit her. It wasn't unusual to have a sweater set from Miriam, a skirt from Zelda, and shoes from Jean. "Are you going out with the blonde tiger again, Natty?" asked Miriam, a buxom girl from Israel with a thick Hebrew accent. The girls all knew Eddie's nickname and many other delicious facts about him. "Where's he taking you tonight, Natty?" asked Zelda as she held up a black circle skirt for Natty's approval. "He's taking me to the movies, I think, and then for a soda. I wonder if he's downstairs yet. Mrs. Henshaw is the one person in the world, besides his mother, who I think scares the daylights out of him," laughed Natty, referring to the house mother who guarded the dormitories as if the girls were princesses in a castle tower. "You've got to admit she's formidable. I think they hired her for her bulldog looks. Do you think she was ever pretty?" asked Jean, laughing. "Maybe about 100 years ago," replied Natty, trying on the black circle skirt with Miriam's red sweater set. "You'll knock his socks off," laughed Zelda. Natty was embarrassed, but secretly pleased. She'd never been told she was pretty until she met Eddie, who told her she was beautiful whenever he saw her. She finally believed she might be pretty when the girls told her so. Girls could be so catty and weren't as likely as boyfriends to give you compliments unless they really meant them. Maybe she could give the movie stars a run for their money, after all. Nursing school was as challenging as it had been in Rose's day. There were classes in the morning and hospital shifts in the afternoon, evening, and overnight. Natty was tired. She'd worked the evening shift the night before and the day shift today. On top of that, Mrs. Henshaw required weekly room inspections, and always on a Sunday. It didn't matter as much if you were working in the hospital Saturday evening, but if you had a date Saturday night after working during the day, you were beat by Sunday morning. But Natty was young and energized by anticipation of the evening ahead. Miriam, Zelda, and Jean either had shifts that evening or dates. The other girls on the floor were noisily preparing for one or the other. After Natty brushed her hair and grabbed her coat, she added the finishing touch of her now signature bright red lipstick. It was November and cold. She was largely unaffected by cold weather. Sometimes she ran barefoot in the snow, relishing the cold between her toes. Natty ran down the stairs, a staircase too grand for the building and a girls' school dormitory. She stopped to slow her pace midway, afraid of capturing Mrs. Henshaw's attention. There was a desk in the middle of the foyer, just below the staircase, that Mrs. Henshaw commandeered, and from which she glared at the young men sitting on couches set against the far walls. She glared at each one in turn, sizing them up to see if they were dressed suitably and had brought a gift, as expected, for their date. Nanny could see her at her desk. All she needed was a ship's wheel to look like a female Captain Ahab. She could also see Eddie, early as always, sitting on one of the couches outside of Mrs. Henshaw's direct view. She suddenly realized she loved him. Mrs. Henshaw had to crane her neck to see him. He was wearing his Bijou Club letter sweater and corduroy trousers, holding a nosegay of fall flowers, looking down to avoid Mrs. Henshaw's piercing gaze. Nanny tried to walk daintily down the remaining stairs, but couldn't wait to see Eddie, so she skipped down the last few. Mrs. Henshaw was not pleased, but kept her own counsel for once. Nanny rushed over to Eddie. The two were out the door before the house mother could say a word. After the movie and while sipping milkshakes, vanilla for Nanny and chocolate, his favorite, for Eddie, he told her he had been drafted. He'd learned to drive a tank. "You'll get hurt. Can't you stay home?" "You're too young," pleaded Nanny. "Me? Get hurt? No way. Look, I hate to leave you, Nanny, but I've been drafted. At least I'll be pretty well protected in a tank. Besides, this is a great way to earn money. I won't have anyone to spend it on," he laughed. "Seriously, I want to start my own art studio. There's a lot of competition out there. I know I can do it, but I need money to rent a place and hire people," he continued as Nanny tried to interrupt. He grasped her hands across the table. "Once I have money and my own business, then we can get married and be together." "Is this a proposal, like in the movies, when the soldier is going off to war? He proposes and never comes back," Nanny said, half excited by the mention of marriage, half anxious that Eddie really might never come back. "I'm serious, Nanny. I want us to be together. I love you, but I have to plan for our future. Besides, you have more than 2 years left of nursing school. We can barely date while you're in school. They won't let you get married." Both were silent, contemplating having a real future together and the looming obstacles. "It's perfect timing when you think about it, Nanny." "How can you think that way when you're talking about going to war?" whispered Nanny, suddenly aware of the crush of men and their dates milling around them. "Nanny," said Eddie, grasping her hand still tighter, bending his head close to hers, looking straight into her dark brown eyes and matching her quiet tone of voice. "Nanny, I can't stay home anymore. My mother drives me crazy. Miriam is married now and has her own family. I stay away from home as much as I can to avoid my mother, but she drives me crazy. Please tell me you understand. I promise I'll write to you every day. You'll be so busy in school you won't even know I'm gone." Eddie was the only one still living at home. He'd slept on two chairs pushed together since he was a kid. He always tried to wait up for his father to see him safely home from the corner bar. Sometimes Eddie brought him home. He didn't blame his father for drinking. Eddie thought, if I were married to Ma, I'd drink a lot and stay away from home, too. His father's health wasn't so good now, though. Eddie worried he'd decline further while he was away. "I guess you've made up your mind. Promise me you won't box in the army. Then I'll have to worry about that, too." Nanny squeezed his hands, then let go and pushed away her half-empty milkshake. Eddie reached across the table and kissed her lightly on the mouth. "It'll be okay. You'll see. I'll still be around for another couple weeks. Come on, let's walk you back before Mrs. Henshaw calls the police on me." Eddie laughed. Nanny tried to laugh for his sake. She knew if anyone could survive a war, though, it'd be Eddie. He was tough. They weren't even calling it a war. It was a police action. Bob Firestone was living quietly with his wife Sadie, running his nightclub with partner Maxie Diamond. It was the hot spot in Cleveland. Sadie had more furs than she knew what to do with. Bob was generous with his money. His three children had graduated from Ivy League colleges. They were set for life with hefty trust funds. He helped Rose until she married Herman and had given Abby and Ira a large envelope of cash as a wedding present. He was prepared to do the same when Natty got married. Max had done well for himself but never refused money from Bob, who gave generously to help Max's kids through college and to help Max bribe his superiors when he got into sticky situations. Izzy and Gladys didn't need his help, although Bob offered. Gladys made good money as a Hollywood agent, and Izzy's sculptures sold to affluent buyers. Izzy and Gladys had purchased a second home in Los Angeles to reduce Gladys's constant travel back and forth to Ohio. Bob stayed there when he had business to conduct, although neither Izzy nor Gladys was comfortable with the arrangement. They knew about Bob's past and were glad they didn't need his money. They couldn't easily refuse allowing Bob to stay in their home when he was in town because they didn't want to make him mad. The family would be forced to take sides. Instead, they stipulated that Bob had to meet his contacts elsewhere, not in their L.A. home. Bob agreed, giving Izzy and Gladys a margin of comfort in case the police came knocking. Sam and Gazella were ready to retire from tailoring. Arthritis in their hands was worsening, making it painful to cut, pin, and sew. Izzy offered to have them move to L.A., where it was warmer and easier on the joints, but they'd not known any place other than Cleveland since they'd arrived from Budapest. They moved in with Bob and Sadie instead. Rose and Herman made frequent visits to Cleveland to see the family, traveling without Natty or Abby. Rose enjoyed herself immensely. She didn't think about her children. Abby was increasingly symptomatic. There were enough seizures and episodes of incontinence for Ira to witness. He didn't know what to do. He had to work, which frequently included travel. Before they'd married, Abby told him she had an illness, but she'd said, "I'm mostly over it now." He'd never seen any signs, and he trusted her words. She seemed to like married life. He wasn't sure what she did all day while he worked, but she always had a hot meal waiting for him. He hadn't asked for much. Then a type of restlessness seemed to have taken hold. Sometimes she wasn't home when he got home. When she arrived and he asked where she'd been, she'd say, "My mother's," or "the store." Then, one weekend, he came out of the bathroom to see her on the floor, drooling and shaking, unresponsive to his calls. He called Rose. "I don't know what's wrong. Something's wrong with Abby. She's shaking and doesn't answer me." "I'll be right over," said Rose. By the time she got there, Abby had come back to herself and was lying on the couch, a cold cloth on her head. After making sure Abby was all right and resting, Rose took Ira into the bedroom and told him to sit down. "What happened, Rose? Is she all right? I was scared to death," said Ira, who was pacing and wouldn't sit down. Rose sat on the edge of the bed. "Is this the first time you've seen one of Abby's seizures, Ira?" "Is that what that was?" "Then yes, it's the first time I've seen it." "Wait, do you mean she's had these before?" "Didn't she tell you? She's had them off and on for a long time. Sometimes medicine helps, sometimes it doesn't. She told me she had an illness, but it was getting better. Is this what she meant? What should I do? How can I help her? Maybe she shouldn't be home alone, but I've got to work." "Calm down, Ira. The seizure's over. Let me think about this. I'm sure we can figure something out. For now, go back in and see her. Talk quietly and calmly. Offer her some water. She probably won't remember anything."